This is the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago. We'll look at markets in 2022 in just a moment. Speaking of that, USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer says he hopes his projections for 2022 are wrong.
I'm not ringing the fire alarm. I'm just saying, hey, keep an eye on things, because this was quite a good year. And I'd be happy to be wrong in the same way next year. I'd be happy to be wrong and say, hey, margins, you know, be saying margins will be a little bit tighter next year, and be totally wrong and have a great farm income year and just blow the doors off again. Be happy to be wrong. But I also want folks to be prepared. I think they're prepared. I think the sector as a whole is prepared quite well in terms of, you know, debt to asset ratios and the health of the overall farm economy. I do worry a little bit about this late season run on input prices.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. And Bob joins us almost every week as we look at the markets, look at where we've been and kind of where we're going as well. And Bob, we start the conversation here in 2022. It's wide open because we've not been trading yet this new year. So what are some things you're kind of watching or focused on in this new year?
Well, I think we're going to kind of see how what happened in 2021 may work its way into 2022. So obviously the elephants in the room are the COVID situation. So we're going to see if this is a wave that we're going to get through quickly and then get to the backside of pretty quick in terms of the Omicron, and see how that impacts our markets and see how that impacts our economy and see how that impacts the demand side of the equation in terms of consumers, and in particular and how that translates into the commodity markets is kind of the same stuff that we've been going through last year or two, in as much as what could be happening in terms of restaurant demand, catering demand for, say, the beef market and the pork market, see how that's going to work its way through. Overall, just general psychology in terms of consumers out there also. So that is the one of the main things. The other is, you know, how that all translates into, you know, the capital markets. And I know we don't talk about a whole lot the larger and broader stock indices as a whole, nor do we generally dive into interest rates and, you know, their trickle-down effect and their impact in our commodity markets, prices moving up and down. But I think that's going to be key, too. We've come off a year in the stock indices that was phenomenal. If all you did was sit on your portfolio on January 1 of 2021 and not do a darn thing, and you were broadly invested across the indices, say the S&P in particular, the Dow, maybe even the NASDAQ, although there was a bit of a roller coaster for some of the individual names there, so you had to deal with some volatility. You know, net, I think the market was up for the S&Ps around 27%. So pretty much you could just sit on your hand if you can handle the volatility, sit on your hands and not pull the trigger about exiting and worrying about timing, and you would have made 27%. And I tell you what, it doesn't take too many years in a row at 27% returns to double your money. So it's really going to be interesting to see what happens this year. If things aren't as accommodative in terms of, you know, what the Fed has been doing, for example, central bank has been doing, for example, what politicians have been doing, for example, in terms of stoking the economy, building in some confidence that we're going to get out of this whole pandemic situation. And it's a lot bigger than me, and I'm not going to even pretend to give you a guess of what's going to happen. But, you know, definitely, do I expect another 27% up year? I don't. I could be dead wrong, but I don't. I expect more of a balance, and in particular, primarily because at this point, it seems like the Fed's going to do its one of its jobs, and that is tamper down inflation. So if that comes into fruition and we see higher interest rates and higher interest rates, you should see lower, you know, bond futures. You should see lower shorter term futures like the euro dollars. And we've kind of already seen that. Those 90 day euro dollars, heavily traded, extremely liquid market. Between March and June of next year, they're pricing in a 25 quarter point differential. So rates in June of this year should be, if the market is correct, about 25 quarter point higher than where March is. You know, and then you can just kind of see how that might trickle down into the 2 years, the 5 years, and the 10 years. And that is some of the big macro things that I'm looking at. And obviously, in terms of interest rates, you read the textbooks. If you did any of this when you were in college or you do it now, you know, interest rates pretty much are supposed to determine currency flow. So if a country has its rates moving higher, you would expect that currency to go higher. So if that currency is the U.S. dollar, you know, how is that going to impact our sales, right? Obviously, I hate to zero in on the dollar in terms of commodity prices and, you know, all the marks that we talk about on a week to week, because I think that's an element. I don't think it's the element, in my opinion, that could really help to dictate whether prices move higher or lower. But a stronger dollar, softer dollar, you know, can set the tone. And I guess if the dollar really starts to take off to the upside, because it looks like the Fed's really going to follow through with some interest rate increases to slow things down in terms of inflation, then that would overall probably become a little bit of a headwind for commodity prices, you know. So we'll see how that all plays out. It's all big picture stuff that we don't normally talk about, but it's something that every single day as I read the pages and pages of research that I get through all different clearing firms that we do business through here on my side of the microphone, you know, it's definitely something that is talked about. All that said, we'll see how it plays out here in the near term in terms of the cattle markets. You know, I think that's going to be an interesting one. We've had a pretty good buoyancy in prices up until last week. I don't know if you can really count what happened with last week in terms of prices falling back a little bit because of the, you know, holiday structure of the markets generally being a little bit less in terms of volume and the bigger players there, say, quote unquote, the smart money, you know, actually probably closing their books a few weeks ago, at least, if not earlier. So don't know if we can really take a whole lot from the little push to the downside last few days, but net net, I think the market's holding up pretty good in the Feb live cattle futures anywhere from like 136 to 141, that nickel range. Don't have a whole lot of data from last week. Cash cattle trade was quiet. USDA wasn't really posting any data because of the holiday. Cash was pretty firm. Northern side, the cash traded mostly 220 to 222. That was $3 to $5 higher than the previous week. So that looks good. Expectations are for a little bit of a lull in terms of business over the next week or two, starting off this new year, primarily because of a bit of a wait and see attitude in terms of the COVID situation and the post holiday impacts on that that may happen. So we'll see if that works its way into the marketplace. We did have pretty good export sales for beef 2021. Cumulative sales were 1.887 million metric tons. That was up from 936,000 a year ago. So if my quick math is right, we nearly doubled export sales in the year of 2021 compared to 2020. Five-year average is about 853,000 metric tons. So really good there. In terms of the type of business, though, recently we've seen a bit of a downtick in sales to China of our beef. I think they were just 1,200 metric tons or so. So it could be that Brazil is back online as a potential seller to China, and that might be one reason why it fell off a little bit. It could also be it was end of year type of situation there in China too. So it'll be really important to watch, you know, how those export sales move along going forward, but also who's buying. And it would be good to see China as a continued buyer. That said, to my point earlier, you know, we talk about the big macro stuff, but also we need to watch the stuff that happens on a week-to-week basis. And this is that time of year when weight gain can be decreased by cold temperatures. And that's exactly what I see happening right now as we speak, being that these Arctic temperatures are moving back into, you know, prime region for cattle land, shall we say, Tuesday and then for a few days. But after that, the cold air is supposed to move out. And actually for the month of January, middle to the end of the month of January, we're looking for I think, relatively warmer than normal temperatures. So it might catch a bid from weather in the near term here, and then I think that that'll be something that kind of acts as a bit of a bearish element. So net-net, to my point, I think we're in a nickel range. I don't really see what's going to push us out of that at the moment, but I like where it's pricing right now.
Hey, Bob, some may not know that you deal with clients pretty much around the world, but especially in the Southern Hemisphere. With a couple of minutes left, are you hearing anything from them as far as concerns as we head into 2022, or things that they're excited about?
They're excited to leave 2021 behind. It's been a difficult year. So you're right. I've got a number of contacts, friends and acquaintances, in the business, in the commodity business down there. And, you know, one of their primary concerns, away from just actually talking about supply demand fundamentals of soybeans, you know, and the weather's a little bit iffy right now, which is one reason why the soybeans were popping pretty good today, up around 16 cents or so for the July contract. And actually at one point, I think it was up in the 20s, is their currency. So I talked about the dollar and what could happen there. The Brazilian real has just been getting hammered. So, you know, just in terms of a day-to-day situation down there, it helps that their currency is low in terms of, you know, potential sales and maybe gaining a bit of an edge down there in terms of just the purchasing power that other countries are going to have to buy the South American production. But it doesn't help them individually for whatever they want to do. You know, generally, you don't want a weak currency. You want a strong currency on a personal basis. So they're dealing with that situation personally and in business. And then in terms of just the overall crop and the things that we talk about, clearly weather's an impact. It's not going away. Argentina right now has been the main driver in terms of less precipitation expected down there, and they need it. Even the southern parts of Brazil is going to get some precip, but still they need more than what is forecast at the moment. So that's the key driver in terms of their concerns for their commodities that we talk about over the near term.
Okay, speaking of talking, we want to talk with you one-on-one. How do we do that?
One-on-one, you can pick up the phone, give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053, or shoot me an email at bmauer@manducatrading.com, or you can just come check out what I and we are about at www.manducatrading.com or www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Again, Bob Mauer with Manduca Trading in Chicago on today's Agribusiness Report.
What happens when Fendt and Livingston Machinery work to make your tractor buying experience the best in the industry? You get a 3-year, 3,000-hour full machine warranty, all scheduled maintenance, and a loaner guarantee, all at no additional cost. The Fendt Gold Star program is setting the new standard in customer care. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
At the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Denver, we caught up with Michael Gerge from Student Loan Advisor.
I think the biggest thing to remember when it comes down to student loans and student loan forgiveness is that you have to be very, very vigilant, because it really can be one of the biggest empowering choices of your life to go out and get this degree inside of the veterinary field, or it can be a tremendous roadblock if it's not managed properly. So we really try and encourage that as the overarching theme and the top line piece of advice that we give to folks.
There's more valuable information on AVMA.org.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Bob Mauer, Manduca Trading, Chicago.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Hi, I'm Debbie Childress, director of the Grayson County Alliance, a food pantry in rural Kentucky. Thanks to a local farmer, we recently received a $2,500 donation from America's Farmers Grow Communities, sponsored by the Monsanto Fund, a philanthropic arm of Bayer. As a result, we expanded a classroom where we teach families about nutrition and personal finance. I encourage all farmers to enroll for a chance to direct a $2,500 donation to a local nonprofit. Visit growcommunities.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Find Bob Maurer online at myfuturesadvisor.com. That's myfuturesadvisor.com.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. Your work keeps our water clean, improves the soil, and enhances wildlife habitat. It also provides countless benefits, not just for you and your family, but for millions of Americans who depend on this region every day without even realizing it. Thank you for being stewards of America's prairie for all of us. Take a moment to find out how conservation pays. Visit conservationpays.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Carbon sequestration is not new. It's a process that has been going on since time began, and one that in part includes agricultural practices over centuries. What is different, according to Lando Lake Senior Sustainability Director Jason Weller, is
now bringing precision agronomy, precision technology, new insights into hybrid technologies, microbiological insights in how to nurture and enhance the function of those living ecosystems. Now that's kind of this new frontier of science and where we can accelerate carbon sequestration and quantify that.
Weller, at a recent National Association of Farm Broadcasting panel on carbon sequestration, acknowledges the importance of companies to develop carbon markets and further incentivize producers.
How do we then compensate farmers for that carbon sequestration benefit they're now providing beyond the commodity production?
As well as technologies developing what's known as carbon crops that could provide extra revenue to growers. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
It's the Agribusiness Report.